You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. Just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch. On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are on my couch. Welcome, everybody. This is the place where you can get some insight with problems or issues going on in your life. And I also give you the psychological spin on some of the latest news stories and newsmakers. And, of course, you can learn a lot from my special guest experts and authors. And today is no exception. You are going to hear an inspirational and heart-wrenching story from my special guest who has agreed to come on the show and share her story with everybody. Her name is Penny Deerhill, and she is author of the book My Secret Memoirs of Love and Survival. Sounds intriguing already, and I know you'll find it great. By the way, if you guys would like to call in, and if you have questions for my guest, you may do so. The number here is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. If you have a question you would like to ask or, you know, anything that you would like to share, your stories, you can do so on that line as well. And if you're shy, you don't want to put your voice on the air, you can email me directly, and I do pick up instant message emails, and I share them with the audience live. And that's at docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com, docmichelle at AOL.com. Let me just say that Penny, who I've had lots of conversations with, is an amazingly strong woman, and she's sharing her story of keeping many secrets in her life. And I don't want to spoil it, so I'm going to bring Penny up right now and have her tell you all. Hey, Penny, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Nice to have you. Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing? You sound pretty good, girl.
I'm okay.
That's great. That is so good. You are an extremely strong person, and what I like about your book, Penny, is that you give hope to other people, specifically women who have suffered abuse. Or are living in it right now. And you all go,
well, that's what I was hoping to do with it. I hope to let people know that they're not alone out there. Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, also, I don't want to turn away the men listeners as well because, I mean, they can learn a lot also from this book. So, guys, don't think...
That's true. It's not just a women's issue.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I mean, we hear more and more about men being abused. And it's not like, oh, they're wusses or they're whatever. It's just, you know, they get in these situations like women do, and they don't know how to get out of it sometimes. But we do know more that statistically women are abused in this country more than men. But let's jump into some of the major events in your life that caused you to write your story. And, you know, you've suffered from so many angles, but you've come out on top. So can you share that with us?
Sure. I originally took the memories out of my head and put them on paper.
Good.
As part of my own healing process.
Mm-hmm.
When I was grieving the loss of my children that first year that we were apart.
Mm-hmm.
It was after several months of parental alienation, and I had been crying so much that sometimes I would cry at work, or when I was, if I was outside enjoying the freedom of a beautiful sunset or a delicious meal, I would cry.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to get a grip on it. And so I just began to write everything down.
Mm-hmm.
And the act of reading it on paper gave me strength to refocus on my new goals as a survivor of domestic violence. And it gave me the strength to be able to filter through the now four invisible umbilical cords and still be able to function.
Right. Right. That's really profound. By the way, just to let you guys know a little bit about the book, and I don't want to reveal all of it, you share your story of keeping the secret about a child that you had with your first love before marrying your abusive husband. And you also talk about being exposed to that abuse for about 17 years.
17 years, yeah.
Ah, mm-hmm. Surviving through that. And then coping with the diagnosis of cervical cancer.
Oh. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then finally gaining the strength to move on in your life and really reconnect, actually, with the gentleman who is the father of your first child, which is a... I love that story, and I love the way you guys reconnected as well. Very inspiring book. You're a good writer, too. Really, really.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you are, honey. So let's kind of help some of the people out there who may be in a negative situation, in a marriage or a, you know, cohabitation situation, or even sometimes family environments. What are some of the early warning signs of a potential abuser that are evident before domestic violence begins? What are those signs, Penny?
Well, early warning signs that, you know, they can be overlooked because there's this gradual transition that takes place. Mm. You know, a person who beats you, they don't do that at the very beginning.
Yeah.
In the very beginning, before physical assault ever takes place, the person, and I'll say person because it could be a man or a woman, they try to control everything that you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowed to make your own choices. Your opinion doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And your partner will probably do everything they can to seclude you from the people who love you, like family, friends, coworkers, or they might not even permit you to work or go to school, outside the home.
Right.
Because they want to control all of the access to any money that comes in.
Right.
And to make you absolutely dependent on them for survival.
Absolutely. Yes. So they control, they start to sort of show signs of controlling absolutely everything in your life. Where are you going? What are you doing? And in your book, you also mention things about how he's changed, right? I mean, he seemed like a fun-loving, cool guy when you met him, and then he
said, sure.
Yeah. So he slowly started to change, and he's tried to tell you what to dress in, what to wear. Yeah. He didn't like what you were wearing because he was thinking that other men would be looking at you. Is that what it's about? Oh, boy.
It started out with I couldn't wear shorts or mini skirts, and then I couldn't wear short sleeve shirts, and then I couldn't wear open toed shoes, and then I couldn't wear any tight clothing at all.
Yes.
And I couldn't wear jewelry or makeup, and then eventually, you know, the more I agreed to what he wanted, I wasn't allowed to smile. I wasn't allowed to bust out laughing because those things were considered flirting.
What?
You know.
You couldn't laugh out in public. You couldn't. Oh my goodness. Wow. This is a major insecure guy. So things started slowly. You started noticing these things, and they built up more and more, and you're saying, and do you think that, Penny, when you're in sort of living with someone every day and having children and just kind of coping with the daily issues of life, that you just sort of get used to these comments and things after a while?
You do get used to them. Mm-hmm. You do get used to them. Your tolerance level gets really high.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what you can put up with because you're trying to hold a family together.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, exactly. So, if you were to give advice to some women right now who may be feeling a little iffy about their relationships, maybe they feel like they're being a little too controlled, you would say, hey, kind of get a reality check. And, you know, from friends or... Of course, you can't probably go out and see friends, huh? Because you're being controlled.
Right. And those friends that love you, they're already trying to tell you to leave. And that's the whole reason why the person that you're with doesn't want you to talk to them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right.
If I could tell anybody if you're in a harmful relationship right now.
Right.
You have to do the hardest part first, and that's make the decision. You're making the decision to save your life. And if you have children, and if you're leaving your children behind because they want to stay, you know, or in my case, you know, he bribed them all into staying there and then destroyed my finances so that I couldn't support them.
Yes.
Then you have to be strong and remind yourself verbally, if you have to, say, I'm doing this so that one day I can get my children out.
Right.
And I'm doing this so that I can give them the freedom that they need, you know, make it a part of your daily prayers. I mean, you have to accept the truth that you're stepping out alone, and it requires you to be very brave, because you're going to lose people who've been your friends, because people will choose sides.
Sure.
Just let them, you know, let them go and focus on what's right in front of you.
Right.
Some tips that I learned through going to what I went through. First, you have to get a bank account in only your name if you don't have one.
Sure.
You can ask a family member or a friend who knows that you need them to help you in absolute confidence.
Right.
If you can use their address to set up an account. That way that the mail will go there instead of your home.
Wow.
And you put money in it when you can, but don't make it obvious. Don't get greedy.
Right.
Wow. Because remember that the person who's controlling you is also controlling all the money. So you have to do this slowly over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Second is talk to your children.
Mm-hmm.
I insisted on giving my children a choice when it came down to it, when I knew that I wanted a divorce. I wanted to know from them whether or not they wanted to move from their home when I was making plans on divorcing, because the ability to choose and decide was never given to me by their father slash stepfather, and he never gave them choices either.
Mm.
Try not to make your child's their choice personally if they don't choose to live with you, because remember, they're not saying no to you.
Right.
They're saying no because they're scared of moving, and they're scared of being uprooted from the only solid ground that they know.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you all are on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest, Penny Deerhill. She's the author of the book, My Secret Memoirs of Love and Survival. And it's basically about how she survived through 17 years being in an abusive marriage and raising her four kids and trying to function as a normal person in the world. It's very helpful. And also, you can check it out tomorrow if you haven't got time to listen to the whole show today. You will be able to listen on download or replay right here on LA Talk Radio on the webpage with Dr. Michelle and on the couch. I wanted to share a story with everyone out there. You know, it's about a client that I had years ago. And this has to do with abuse situations. And she came to me because she'd been in a marriage, actually, for about 10 years. And she was to the point where she was literally entrapped in her home. She had to, you know, spend her time in a particular room. He wouldn't let her out to go to a doctor's checkup unless he went. Even the gynecologist, even the mammography, he had to be there in all and every situation of the doctor's offices because he did not want her to be left alone. God forbid she tells someone, you know, about the abuse going on. Fascinating stuff. But anyway, so what happened was she said that, you know, after a while, she gets numbed to, you know, all of the feelings. She doesn't know who she is after a while. She does not know how to feel. She doesn't know what she's doing. Basically what it is that a lot of women who are in abusive situations, as I learned from this particular client, they shut down completely. They learn to shut down. They learn that it's, you know, it's no use, and they give up. They don't have the strength. And what's really cool about this particular story of my guest, who is almost on the line here, is that you can survive. You have to get strength. You have to find a way. And today, hopefully, you'll find out and learn how to get that help, how to reach out and get that help. And that's the way it works. But, you know, what happens a lot of times is that people who are in abusive relationships, they shut off. They get numb. They get used to the idea that they're going to be trapped forever. They don't have control over finances. They don't have control, you know, over anything going on in their life anymore. So that can be a problem. And, you know, I think that's why people stay in abusive relationships for so many years, because they don't know what to do. They feel trapped. They don't know how to, you know, deal with it. And that's the way it usually is. I was trying to vamp here and tell listeners about a client who I worked with who had stayed in an abusive relationship for 10 years. She was literally, Penny, she was literally trapped in a particular room. I mean, he had her, she could only come down to the kitchen to get food for them make dinner, and then she had to go back up into the room, into their room, and eat
the
food. Yeah, she couldn't go out with certain clothing, just like you're talking about. He had to go to every doctor's appointment with her, which was really fascinating. He would not let the doctor be alone with her. And I think the whole thing,
right,
too,
yeah,
was controlling what she might say to other people, right?
Exactly.
So you found with your abusive ex-husband, Steve, that when you would go out into public or, you know, with him, he would always very carefully watch what you said, or he was always there, right, to make sure that you didn't give any signals that you were being abused.
Yes, I would also have to walk a step behind him. I had to cast my eyes down. I couldn't look anyone in the eye, especially men.
Mm. Wow.
I eventually learned to just not pretty much look anybody in the eye, except unless they were close family.
Right. Now, did you pick up any signs before this was happening in your marriage? Did you pick up anything that may have clued you into the fact that he was an angry man, he was controlling, or he was going to start abusing you?
It concerned me how conservative he was.
Yes.
He was just extremely conservative. Now, I was raised to be a gypsy-spirited, loving person, accepting of everybody.
Right.
And to not allow stereotypes to define who I was friends with. So,
right.
I mean, so that's why I was able to see past a lot of the cultural differences.
Right. And yeah. You said he was of an Islamic culture?
Yes. Yeah, that's just his DNA.
But he was American. So he was American born here, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there were a lot of traditional things, maybe, that his family, a lot of pressure possibly that his family put on him?
Oh, yes. And, you know, I believe that he probably picked me because I was the epitome of everything that they could not stand. You know, I was an independent, strong-willed woman, mm-hmm. and most of all, I was not a virgin.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So it was, in a way, psychologically, it was his way of getting back at his parents. He was
probably
rebelling a little bit against that firm control from them, yet they influenced him to a large extent to really start cracking down on you. And he did have a lot of, you mentioned also that he, you know, had PTSD, and he had a lot of issues going on as well, a lot of unresolved anger. So that he,
yes.
And he projected that onto you.
Yes. I mean, he was actually pretty controlled prior. I mean, he went to the Iraq war, you know, when it first started. And when he came back from that, there was no control at all. I mean, to the point that they removed him from the armed forces because his commander could see that he was, you know, not trustworthy. He was out of control.
Right,
you know?
Right. So. Now, I know in your story that you were very young when you met, as we're calling him, Aaron. And he was the father, is the father of your first child, your daughter.
Yes.
And you knew that, and that was sort of a secret that you kept, actually, from your abusive husband. God forbid he knows that you had a child with another man.
Yeah, God forbid he knew that I had cheated on the husband that I was with before him, yeah.
Right, right. So you did have your baby, and she's a beautiful girl, and she's a young lady now. She's grown up.
She's going to be 20. She's
wow.
going to be 20, yeah.
That's beautiful. And what was it that gave you the courage to tell your abusive husband that your first child was not his?
Ashley had asked me, actually, it was the morning of her 18th birthday, mm-hmm. and I had gotten up really early to make her some pancakes. And she asked me the question that I had kind of both waited for and dreaded her entire life.
Right, right.
She said, Mom, who do I resemble? And I just looked at her, and I said, well, you know, you're about 99.9% me, and because she is, like, God took a stamp as a ka-chunk, you know?
Yes, yes.
And then she said, and she's a very intelligent girl, and she said, well,
yes.
What's that, the 0.01%?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was, oh, Lord, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, dear. Yeah.
I made sure that no one was listening. So I told her, I said, look, okay, what I'm about to tell you, can't leave the room, because if it does, it's going to rock the entire world.
Right.
And I said, you know, the truth is, you know, when I was married, you know, to the man whose last name you carry, mm-hmm. you know, I had an affair mm-hmm. just for, you know, a few days. Mm-hmm. And with a friend of mine who used to be my neighbor when we were kids, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And he had moved away when we were 17, and he had, you know, come back for just those few days when we were 20, 21. And so it wasn't planned, but it happened. And so naturally she wanted to know everything about him.
Right.
And she wanted to meet him, is what it was.
Of course.
And
of course.
She had medical questions. And,
mm-hmm. Sure.
So I knew that there was no way that even if I did an internet search and found him, he has a very common name, you know,
right.
even if I did find him, I would never be able to go to him mm-hmm. and tell him.
Right.
Just because the person that I was married to was so controlling that, you know, I wasn't allowed to speak to him. I wasn't, you know.
Right.
And just don't even take into consideration my daughter. This was an old love of mine,
yes.
you know.
Yes.
So I just did the only thing I could do, and that was I went to the bathroom and I prayed about it. And I was very specific.
Right.
I said, God, please, you know, get him to me because, you know, Ashley has questions. She
right.
wants to know him. I didn't want to hurt him. I didn't want to change his life. I didn't want anything from him. I just
right.
wanted him to know.
Right.
You know.
And you had never, of course, told him. So you were just out there sort of praying to have the father of your first child, Ashley, call you. Or contact.
Yeah, and it had been 19 years since we had spoken to each other.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, yeah. So yeah. You'd kept this secret
all this time. That wasn't on purpose. It's just that we had both moved and
right.
couldn't stay in touch.
Sure, yeah. sure. So you kept this secret all this time, and, of course, when your husband really started abusing you, and he was unknowing that your first child was, Aaron's child, you, God forbid you to say anything, so you kept it in for so long. And so you told your daughter, and then, you know, in your story as it unfolds, which is really good, miraculously he contacted you. You reached out and found him.
Wow. 4 months later, of all places on Facebook, yeah.
Isn't that, well, it's a, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing how Facebook can do those things.
It was on my birthday, and I had pretty much forgotten about everything by that point, and I went on to the Facebook to just look at all the birthday, you know, your wall is full of birthday wishes, and
right.
there was one from him, and I thought, you know, Lord, it read, hey, I've got a surprise for your birthday, but it's going to take about 3 weeks to get there. Can you wait?
Aww.
And I thought, oh. You know,
wow.
I've waited 19 years to speak to you. 3 weeks is no problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was naive about it. You know, he was a musician back in the day, and I thought, you know, well, he's spontaneous and silly enough to write a song for my birthday and mm-hmm. record it, you know, because that's just who he is. So I was thinking that's what was going to take 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
3 weeks went by, and good as gold, he contacted me again, and said, your surprise is almost there. It just needs a few more minutes.
Mm.
And again, I thought, oh, well, he's recorded it, and now he's uploading it, because uploading a song takes a few minutes.
Right,
you know?
Right.
No, that's not what it was.
Yeah.
The surprise was he had actually moved to my city.
Mm.
And he had looked up my address online, and he was fixing to come to my house to come see me.
Wow. That would have been a mistake with your abusive husband there, right?
That was, yeah. So I had to tell him to no, don't do that.
Yes.
And I just had to explain to him that, you know, my husband wasn't like us. He was, you know, very conservative, and it would be a very dangerous thing for him to just pop up out of the blue.
Absolutely.
And so we agreed to meet 5 days later, which was the earliest time we could. I had to come up with a reason to leave the house, and
sure.
so, you know, that gave me time enough to leave the house a little earlier than usual, and it wouldn't look awkward, and I met him for lunch, and
wow.
we spent, you know, a very exciting lunch together, you know, catching up, trying to catch up on 19 years of being of not talking to each other.
Right, exactly.
Which is impossible to do in an hour, but I got to tell him.
Right.
I got to tell him about Ashley.
Yes.
And his response was, it was amazing. He was so happy. He was so thankful that I had told him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is so wonderful. And finally they met, of course, and, you know, it must have been an amazing thing.
Oh, there wasn't a dry eye anywhere.
I bet. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, of course, your abusive husband found out about this. So what happened? How did he react to that?
About a month later, he found out about everything.
Uh-huh.
And you know, what happened was exactly what I expected would happen. He went out of his way to destroy any kind of relationship that Aaron and Ashley could have ever had.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
He went over to Aaron's house to kind of size him up, and his intention was to ask him what he thought about me as a person.
Yeah.
For never telling him and for just throwing this on him when Ashley was an adult and all that. And Aaron was just, you know, very honest. He said, you know, I've known her since we were kids. I've loved her for 26 years, and no time apart, no geography apart has ever changed that, and I would do anything to help her.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And but here's the thing. I didn't know that he had asked him that.
Mm.
And then we went home that night, and he asked me the same question.
Yes.
And I essentially gave the same answer in the exact same words.
Right. Right. Right.
And that was actually the time that I knew that I needed to get out, because he went ballistic and he hit me so hard that I blacked out, and he blacked my eye, and you know, I had defensive bruises on my arms, and everything was downhill from there.
You were pretty comatose. They called the paramedics, and then you woke up, and then from then you said, I'm done. That's it. I am done. There's something in you, Penny, that gave you that courage to say, no longer will I be hit. No longer will I be bleeding. No longer will I be bruised. I'm done.
Something died. Yeah. Something died inside of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that was the only way that I had the strength. I guess it was the last little glimmer of, you know, I can't say that it was the last little glimmer of hope, because it was actually the beginning of hope.
Yes. Well said. And actually, you know what died? You could have died, Penny, by staying in that marriage.
If I stayed there.
Absolutely.
If I stayed there, I'm convinced I would have.
I think so. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle Cohen and my special guest today, Penny Deerhill. She's the author of the book, My Secret, Memoirs of Love and Survival. And Penny's an amazingly strong woman. She shares her story of keeping a secret about a child she had with her first love. And, of course, that was before marrying her abusive husband. She had to keep this secret for a very long time. About 17 years she was married and finally got the courage, got the strength to get up, take good care of herself, and sort of get out of that marriage. Because, literally, her abusive husband, who we'll call Steve at the time, trapped her into not having any independence in her life, basically. She had to behave in certain ways. She couldn't look. She couldn't talk in certain ways. She couldn't dress in certain ways. And, you know, complete control over her behaviors, control over her thoughts, control over her actions, the way, you know, everything. So finally she did it, though. She took that step out and said, no more. I am done. Penny, what can you tell women and men, because there are men in abusive relationships, to help them get out of a negative or abusive situation that they're in? What can you do to encourage them to get out?
Well, if they're worried about physical assault when they're trying to leave,
yeah,
you have to try to do that when your partner's not at home.
Yes.
You may have an open window of only a few minutes.
Yes.
Okay. If it happens without any notice at all, you have to have the phone ready.
Right.
Means you have to have a phone, you know. But either have a ride ready to pick you up, like a friend or a family member.
Yes.
The number to a taxi service, if you have money for that.
Right.
If you have no one who can help you.
Right.
You can call a local crisis center, and they will have someone get you out.
Yes.
With or without your children, they will come, and they will house you in a place anonymously.
Wow.
I want to give the national hotline for that, because what happens if you call the national hotline is
right.
They will connect you to whatever local number that you need.
Oh, that's great. That's the National Domestic Abuse Hotline, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's 1-800-799-7233. That's 1-800-799-SAFE. But,
yes.
You know, some phones, the letters don't match the numbers. So
right.
It's 7233.
Well,
yeah.
That's wonderful. That is so wonderful that you... Did you happen to call that number, or you had just decided after you were finally beaten and went into a total blackout and the paramedics had to come when you said, I'm done?
The blackout happened mm-hmm. A few days before I actually had to leave when mm-hmm. I did, but I ended up calling that number after I had left
yes.
because the crisis center also helps you with a lawyer. I had no legal assistance at all.
Right. You had no money either.
Yeah.
So right.
Right. I had nothing. No car, no phone, no clothes, and you know, no access to anything. Mm-hmm. So the legal help that they give you is pro bono, which I would love to say was wonderful, but I can't say it was wonderful.
Well,
but.
You know, look, you're getting probably, you know, a legal assistant or, you know, some attorneys who have their own practice who do, you know, at least they have the heart to help out people, you know, in horrible
situations.
They
do have the heart to help out people,
yeah.
Yes.
And that's
yeah.
the beauty of it. So what are some of the habits, Penny, that you had to relearn in order to be independent after you left your ex-husband? Because I know that you just get used to operating in certain styles. I can't say this. I can't do this. I can't wear this. I can't.
Like a robot. You,
exactly.
Like a robot, you think. The first thing I relearned were simple habits,
mm-hmm.
like looking at people, especially men in the eye,
mm-hmm.
and not walking behind. My friend Aaron sort of made it his mission to do that, but the very first chance he had, he actually took me over to his male friend's house
yes.
to get me used to looking men in the eye.
My goodness. Yes.
Yeah. And I remember us walking across the parking lot, mm-hmm. and I was automatically going into that mode of walking a couple of steps behind him.
Sure.
And he stopped in the parking lot and looked at me,
mm-hmm.
and there was such an expression of grief on his face.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I have never made a woman walk behind me, and, you know, you don't have to do it anymore. Please walk beside me. And he held out his hand for me to hold to walk behind him.
Right. So you needed someone to help literally walk you through, you know, the steps.
Baby steps.
Of
he took
the,
me
yes.
to a store. He
yes.
took me to a store with a list of things to buy.
Yes.
And I had to go in there and search for them and pay for them. These are things that people take for granted.
Right.
But If you've been stripped of your freedom for a very long time, you're not allowed to interact with people.
Wow.
And you have to relearn how to do everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and then,
goodness.
Of course, the best things for me to relearn how to do was just having the freedom to bust out laughing or to smile.
Right.
I had to learn that crying or getting mad was okay.
Right.
You know,
right.
I had the power to say no, you know.
Wow. Wow. You were like a beat puppy.
I was a bee puppy. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I am so sorry that you had to deal with this, and it breaks my heart to read your story, Penny, but I, on the other hand, you're very inspiring, and I know that your book will help a lot of people there who are listening, who have been or may be thinking that they are in too much of a controlling relationship, even if they haven't been, say, physically abused. They may start to see signs that we talked about earlier in the show, the verbal abuse, the, you know, taking control of the finances, the, you know, you can't go here, you can't wear this, you can't smile. I mean, you start to see these little things, and maybe in some way your book, you know, My Secret, The Memoirs of Love and Survival, can really help some people out there. So it's an amazing story, and... you know, you lay it out there, and it's inspirational. I don't want to be a whole downer on this show, because I want listeners to know that it has a pretty happy ending. Can you share with us, you know, your life now and how it's going since you've gotten out of that abusive marriage?
Well, I've gotten to the point where I really appreciate the freedom. I think anybody who's had freedom taken away from them for a long period of time for any reason probably appreciates freedom. I treasure every sunrise. It's like God's way of saying, you know, don't give up. Mm-hmm. I no longer have to be afraid of being hurt. If I fail to do something, you know, like my ex-husband wanted me to do that day, or I don't have to live in fear of not being able to prove myself because I constantly had to prove myself. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much freedom in not having to keep a secret, so much that I don't want to ever keep one again.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Well,
and I also, you know, waking up next to my best friend, you know, the person that I've loved since I was a teenager.
Right.
He's been on my side ever since I got out. And every bit of love that we've ever had but we never got to share before now, it just grows with every passing day. And, you know, he helped me to rediscover myself and he gave me all the time that I needed to grieve and to heal. And he's encouraged me. And he still encourages me every day to be myself and to treasure each moment in life and to remember why I'm doing this. And that's just that my kids still need me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I really feel when I see the sunrise every day is I don't give up because I know that God doesn't ever give up.
Right. You know, that inspiration is that you have received. And you would think a lot of people who've been through the abuse that you suffered for so many years and the negativity and the control, you know, would be jaded and would say, why would a God put me into this position? You know? Why
oh, don't get
happen?
Me wrong. I had a lot of anger.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Anger is a stage of grieving. It's very real.
Of course it
and
is,
honey. You are bargaining. You're bargaining with God when you're grieving like that.
That's sure true.
But, you know, there comes a time when you have to accept things as they are right now because things are going to change. They're not going to stay the same forever.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that there will come a day when I will be able to go back to court, mm-hmm. you know.
Yep.
And if it doesn't happen before my kids are grown,
yes.
you know, they're always going to have a bed.
Yes.
You know?
Well, bless your heart. Do you suppose your children understand what's going on? You said that your children, you know, grow up seeing your ex-abusive husband yelling and screaming at you. And did they see any of the physical abuse that he imposed on you?
The physical abuse they saw very little of because the majority of the time he did it, they were in school.
Ah, okay. Right.
Or they were simply outside playing.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
So there was a time, I remember one time when we're calling him Steve, right?
Yeah.
He broke my face and both my eyes swelled shut. And
oh my God.
One of my children came home from school. She was 8 years old at the time, and she said, why don't you break up with Daddy?
Oh, my goodness. You know? Yes. Yes.
And it was just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
She's so wise. You know, she's always been that wise. But
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you guys would, you know, he would be yelling at you a lot. I mean, there would be a lot of chaos in the home. He would show
yelling was normal.
Yes. Yes.
And that was actually something that was culturally normal for him because
yes.
his family was the same way.
Sure, sure, exactly. And mm-hmm. you found that you couldn't yell after a while, that you had to be quiet and be obedient. So they just saw that.
Yes.
Now, do you think that they understand? Have you been in contact with them? And do you think your children understand that mommy had to leave or she was probably going to be killed?
I get very few precious minutes with them. I actually get so few minutes I can actually count them. Mm-hmm. The visitation that I got from the court is the minimum standard required visitation for the state of Alabama,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually 8 hours a month.
Mm-hmm.
And and during that time, yeah, it's 480 minutes if you count it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But during that time, you know, all we do is talk.
Yes.
Me and my children just talk.
Yes, yes.
And they do understand. They understand that, you know, mommy had to go because things were so bad that mommy was in danger.
And they don't take it personally like mommy left us.
No, they understood from the very beginning, you know.
Wow.
He has tried to alienate them
yes.
by not allowing them to contact me.
Of
you
course.
Know, between visitation time, you know, between
course.
Visitation time,
yeah.
I don't get to talk to them
mm-hmm.
unless one of them actually creates an anonymous account on one of the social media websites and sneaks around and contacts me that way.
Well, good.
Because, you know, he controls the mail, he controls the computer, he controls the phone.
Oh, that's sad.
And mm-hmm. I've tried to call, you know, multiple times over the past year and a half, sure, and of course, sure. it's always, I'm sure he's blocked my number. And,
sure. And, well, I'm sure that, you know, since he had control of all the money and he was, you know, having income, that he was able to hire an attorney and sort of spin that, right?
Yes, he actually hired a very expensive attorney.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, darling, you know what? This is a really fascinating story. It's inspirational because it does have a positive outcome. You're still working to have a better relationship with your children, and they're getting older now, so they're going to want to, you know, leave when they can. I mean, your daughter is 18.
They already do. They already want to live with me.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
My 16-year-old daughter wants to live with me so badly.
Oh, honey,
what the kids see mm-hmm. in me is that I'm smiling now, and I have confidence now.
Yes.
And, you know, they see the person that I'm with.
Right.
He's very calm, and,
yes.
you know, I've heard from all of the children, he makes being a grown-up look easy.
Mm, my goodness. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, listen,
and
Penny.
To me, that yeah. should be the biggest compliment in the whole world.
Oh,
go ahead.
You said it. You said it. Well, thank you so much for sharing your heartwarming story with us and your survival. And, guys, pick up the book if you can, if you really are in a situation, or if you have a friend who maybe, we all have family members or friends who've experienced it. It's called My Secret, The Memoirs of Love and Survival, and Penny Deerhill is the author, of course. And as of tomorrow, I'm going to put in some of the archives, so if you would like to listen to the show, you can replay it or download it. Also, all my shows are available on iTunes, and as well, I'll be giving you information about an abuse hotline and any online information that can help you as well. So, Penny, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been a delight, and it's very courageous of you to come on live. I know it's been upsetting, and I've heard it in your voice a bit, but you're...
Well, thank you for inviting me. Yes, it's hard, you know, speaking
yeah.
out, but it needs to be done.
That's right. And
so
you're
thank you for giving me this chance.
Oh, my pleasure, Penny. You've helped out a lot of people, I'm sure. Bless you. Take good care, and thanks so much again for being here on the couch. All right.
Okay.
Bye now.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, guys. Again, that you can pick up the book, and I'll leave that address for you here on the archives on LA Talk Radio if you'd like to get more information. And always helping us out here. Little heavy show today, sort of hard to deal with, a little painful, but yeah, it's part of life sometimes, and that's how we learn to grow. Life is lessons. We all make mistakes. And it's how we cope with the problems in life that matters, and how we change to make ourselves better. And as I always do say, take care of yourself first, see, and then you'll be better for others. Thanks for being on the couch. You can stay if you like. More great shows coming up here on LA Talk Radio. This is Dr. Michelle. Have a beautiful day. Bye-bye now.